Sometimes you just want the quick facts. No opinions, no speculation. I'm Claire Thornton, an audio editor with USA Today. My team works around the clock to bring you the Five Things podcast. Every morning, me and my co-host Taylor Wilson help you know what to keep an eye out for that day. We always have a fresh mix of stories, from politics to entertainment to sports, covering all parts of the country. On Sundays, you can lean back with in-depth episodes about stories you may have heard earlier that week. Go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows and start listening to Five Things today.
Inside Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Florida lawmakers react to a leaked Supreme Court memo indicating the Roe v. Wade decision protecting abortion rights will soon be overturned. Governor Ron DeSantis says more Disney legislation is in the works, and a new election law gets the governor's signature. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and those are some of the stories I'll be discussing today with Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy and Palm Beach Post politics editor Antonio Finns. But first, that music means it's time to pick some numbers. John, do you have a number for us today?
Zach, I do have a number this week, and it's a four. As usual, it's a fab four.
Fab four today for John. And how about you, Antonio?
Well, I got a four too, but it's 45.
We're going to keep going up here. My number is 75 million. Remember those numbers, folks. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics at the end of the show. Well, the bombshell political report detailing the contents of a leaked Supreme Court ruling overturning Roe v. Wade sent shockwaves through Florida's political circles this week. Democrats reacted with outrage. Republicans, though, were muted in their response. The impending demise of Roe has the potential to really alter the political landscape in Florida, energizing Democrats and putting Republicans on the defensive after it seemed like the GOP had momentum going into the 2022 election cycle. John, what's some of the reaction you're hearing?
Well, there does seem to be a divide on how to respond. Democrats and allied women's organizations and abortion rights groups, they've been very vocal. A dozen rallies were held around the state the day after the leaked opinion came out. But as you point out, Zach, the Republican governor has been very measured in his approach to this. And of course, nowadays, Republican legislative leaders take all their cues from him. So they've been largely silent on this. What does all this mean? Well, sure, Democrats see this as a potential motivating moment for their voters heading toward the midterm elections, where, as we well aware, President Biden has been doing poorly in the polls. Inflation is a talking point being used against him. Migrants at the Mexican border, have really inflamed Fox News. That's a regular story there. So the idea that the court could overturn Roe versus Wade is a huge political shift that a lot of voters, and not just Democrats, a lot of these voters may not be ready for. The idea, as the draft opinion said, that the abortion laws in this country should be set by the individual states, that also has animated people here in Florida, where conservative Republicans have an ironclad grip on state government. So Democrats will try to get as many people's attention on this and try to get their voters out for this fall's election in a bid to assure some kind of safeguards that abortion will still remain legal and accessible in the state. Republicans, I think, may not know exactly what to do right now. It's easy to blast the idea of the leak as being a betrayal of the court. We've heard DeSantis go in that direction. And Republicans can try to create the narrative that it must be a left-leaning justice or a staffer to blame, because it appears to be benefiting Democrats politically right now to stir the base. But of course, we don't know if that's how the document was leaked. And a case can be made that the leak was by somebody looking to get it out on the record and assure that not one of the five conservative justices who signed on to the draft would defect and opt for something less than overturning the famous 1973 landmark Roe versus Wade case. But Florida Republican legislators may know that they're going to have a tiger by the tail with this politically. The state has enacted a new law that's set to go into effect on July 1st that bans most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. That new limit, an earlier poll showed, is opposed by 57% of Floridians. So that's a potential political problem for Republicans who supported it, at least in some legislative districts. And maybe it has some blowback for DeSantis in his reelection. But if Roe versus Wade is abolished with an official ruling coming out of the United States Supreme Court expected in June or July, will DeSantis and Republican legislative leaders also have to do more to sort of placate a very strong anti-abortion wing within the GOP? Politically, an abortion ban in Florida would be wildly unpopular in much of this state. Going far more than any opposition, I think, that we would see to a 15-week limit on abortions. At the very least, Republicans seem that they're sensing risk in going too far, that it could have a real challenge on their hands in keeping the socially conservative and religious voting base on board that maybe feels ignored if DeSantis doesn't come out calling for a ban on most abortions in Florida, in a state that maybe isn't as conservative and religiously driven as we've seen our neighbors, Alabama and Mississippi. Even though this 15-week ban we're talking about is modeled on Mississippi's law, I don't think Florida's voting electorate is quite as rabidly right as some of our neighboring states. So anyway, it may be a challenge for the governor, and I think we're sensing that in these opening days after the leak, just trying to navigate a call for an abortion ban from within his party's most conservative wing, and for the governor, I think he's realizing that in a general election, he doesn't want to go too far with restrictions that really don't meet the mood of this state.
Yeah, you can really tell there's some trepidation on his part. The governor's been asked twice now this week at press conferences in Fort Myers and in Clearwater, back to back on Tuesday and Wednesday, if he would consider putting abortion as one of the issues up for discussion in this special session that he called for later this month on property insurance. He can expand the special session to include other topics, and he's deflected both times. I mean, he doesn't seem eager to jump into this issue right away, even though in the past, when he was running for election in 2018 the first time, and he was running in a primary against Adam Putnam, Putnam came out strongly in favor of a so-called heartbeat bill, which would ban abortions after a fetal heartbeat can be detected, which is roughly around 6 weeks. So, pretty early on in the pregnancy. And DeSantis also said that he supports a heartbeat bill. So he's come out for even stronger restrictions than what they approved this year. But he's not talking about doing that right away. He said, when asked about it yesterday, he said, well, property insurance is a crisis right now. And he also, the implication is that he doesn't think the abortion issue has as much immediacy. And then when he was asked about it the day before, he said, well, we just passed the, strongest new abortion laws in this state in a long time. So basically saying, we've already delivered on a big abortion bill. So we don't necessarily need to go ahead with another one right now. But I think you're right, John. I think there's going to be pressure on him from the right. We saw this week where an anti-abortion group, Florida Voices for the Unborn, was calling on DeSantis to expand the special session to ban all abortions in the state. I think those calls are going to ramp up, especially once if in fact this opinion, the Supreme Court opinion, is released and you have Roe v. Wade overturned, I think, anti-abortion activists are going to look around and say, there's nothing stopping us now. Why aren't we going further if you've promised to go further? And I think the pressure is going to be on DeSantis. And, as somebody who seems like he wants to run for the presidency, this issue could be important in a GOP primary. So he's going to have a balancing act. You know, polls show that, you know, new abortion restrictions are not that popular in Florida. I don't know if there's been a ton of polling on the issue lately, but the University of North Florida did do a poll that found that the majority of people opposed the 15-week ban that DeSantis signed a few weeks ago. So it does seem like a dicey issue. Democrats are really jumping on this to try and rally their base. Is this a game changer or wishful thinking on their part?
You know, Zach, that they have definitely pounced on this, but the answer to that lies in how much of a single issue or decisive issue this becomes going forward. And there are historical antecedents to argue yes and no. But more on that in a moment. First of all, the Democrats immediately pounced on the news of the Supreme Court decision draft opinion, right? I mean, starting that evening and in early the next morning. Every Democrat in the Florida congressional delegation came out lockstep to denounce the news. Two of the noteworthy condemnations were from congressional members Charlie Crist and Val Demings. I mentioned Crist and Demings because they are running, you know, campaigns for governor and U.S. Senate, and they're on the federal level. And Crist called the news gut-wrenching for women and reproductive freedom in the United States. And he noted his work as a Republican state senator decades ago to block a required 24-hour waiting period for those women seeking an abortion. Not to be outdone, Chris, two Democratic rivals for the gubernatorial nomination, Nikki Fried, the Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services, and State Senator Annette Tadele, also blasted the impending Supreme Court ruling that would, you know, presumably void Roe versus Wade. A fired-up Demings was at a rally in her hometown of Jacksonville that evening, so the following evening, where she told Republicans to, quote unquote, doggone, get a life. And then she said that when she decided to start a family, she didn't have to ask permission from a governor or U.S. senator. And as you know, if she were to win the race and become a U.S. senator, she would support, you know, legislation to codify abortion rights in the U.S. You know, I would also note that Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz of Weston also released a video, really interesting video from 2006. At the time, she was a member of Congress, and she appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee during the confirmation hearings for Justice Samuel Alito, who is presumably the author of that draft opinion. And Wasserman Schultz, in her testimony before the U.S. Senate 16 years ago, warned against the nomination of Justice, then Judge Alito, saying that, you know, that she had questions about how committed he would be to established, you know, precedents at the Supreme Court. And she said in the statement the other day that it was sickening to her that her prediction, she said, from 16 years ago had apparently come true. Now, the other question you raise is, does this galvanize the Democratic rank and file in Florida? Look, let's face it, Democrats seriously need galvanizing in this year's elections. You know, we've talked about this in the past, that Republicans have added more than 600,000 more voters to top 5.1 million across the Sunshine State as of the end of March. And in the process, they've wiped out the 300,000 voter advantage that Florida Democrats held before 2017. And Republicans outnumber Democrats in the state by a margin of 111,000 registered voters. So, you know, they you know, if they're going to galvanize their base, they need an issue. And this could be it. I mean, I recall back, I covered the 1990 governor's race in here in Florida. And back then, Republican Governor Bob Martinez was seeking re-election. But in his one term, Martinez had jumped on the pro-life bandwagon around the time of the 1988 Casey decision that reaffirmed Roe versus Wade. And that cost him in his 1990 re-election effort when he lost to Lawton Childs. But then again, you know, that was 32 years ago. Florida has changed. It's a lot redder. And what I'm hearing is as to whether this is going to be a catalyst really depends a lot on the discussion that you and John had, namely the challenge for the governor to satisfy his base. And I will also point out that 2 years ago, DeSantis was under pressure from the more militant, you know, pro-life organizations in the state who wanted him to shut down abortion clinics that perform abortions during the pandemic business closure. In addition, there are rumblings that, hey, you know, DeSantis has called a special session to deal with redistricting, to deal with Disney's taxing district, property insurance. You know, the more militant hard right on the abortion issue is going to wonder, wait a minute, why won't you call one for abortions once this decision comes out? So, you know, the stakes are going to be pretty high. And I guess the common denominator we can say is an abortion is an issue that sparks passions, and candidates in both parties better be prepared to manage their supporters.
I do think that, you know, it could depend somewhat on, you know, what the Republicans continue to do on this issue. I'm kind of skeptical that they're going to do much more before the election. You know, I think DeSantis can point to this 15-week abortion ban and say this was you know, we delivered you know, historic restrictions, and you know, sort of nod to what he might do after the election. And the question is what DeSantis might do after the election. And you know, just the idea of this Supreme Court opinion dropping when it does that galvanize enough people to overcome sort of the malaise that Democrats have had in the state? And I don't know, it'll be fascinating to see. I mean, this issue certainly does galvanize certain people. You know, others, maybe it doesn't affect them so directly, and it's not, you know, something that they would be a single issue voter on. So certainly, though, throws a big wrench into the political cycle this year.
But even as you pointed out earlier in one of the previous podcasts, Zach, that, you know, that the 15-week ban, it's what only would have affected 2,000 of the abortions last year, wasn't that?
Yeah, less than that, actually. So, I mean, it's something that, I mean, when you can sell it, though. I mean, the governor is going to come out and say, you know, it used to be 24 weeks. Now it's 15 weeks. We've protected, you know, a certain number, you know, or we've stopped a certain number of abortions, or we've made a big change. And so I think he'll be able to sell that to his voters, you know, on the campaign trail. And I think, you know, yeah, it does, though, it affect a relatively small number of abortions in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, you look at what other states are doing. These heartbeat bills have become increasingly common. Texas had one passed last year. Idaho followed right after that. Other states have passed them. I think Texas was the first one that actually went into law and wasn't blocked by a court. But, you know, the governor's on record supporting that. So I think at some point some of his base is going to say, hey, why aren't we moving forward with that?
I think we're also seeing a little bit, the governor may be signaling his effort to try to stall this a little while, because you've heard him speak in most recently in a couple of news conferences this week about how Florida's 15-week law will still face a challenge in state court because of the state's privacy protections.
Right.
Florida has a kind of a unique privacy law. It's one of, just a handful of states that have such a broad privacy law. So I think in this case, maybe the governor is welcoming the idea that the issue of abortion in Florida could be tied up in state court for a few months. And I wonder about that, if there will be an effort by the governor and other leading Republicans to sort of, you know, punt this issue until after the November elections, to somehow cite that, well, it's still being determined how far Florida's privacy law restricts how far legislators can go in abolishing abortion or further inhibiting it in some fashion. So I wonder about that. We're suddenly seeing Governor DeSantis with a open concern about the state court and privacy laws, which seems a little bit uncharacteristic for a governor who a lot of people often say, you know, he shoots first and aims later.
And yeah, I think you're right, John. I think that gives him some political cover to say, well, we want to wait for these court cases to play out. And, you know, it's been 50 years since this Roe v. Wade decision. The anti-abortion folks have been waiting a long time. I think the governor can probably stall them kind of delay any action on this for at least a little while longer. But
Fred, one other thing is there's always been this fault line, even among Republicans, when it comes to this issue and Roe versus Wade. And that is that there are many who would, while they want to see Roe versus Wade overruled, it was so that it would be easier to implement restrictions, not an outright ban. And that's going to be the tension between within the Republican camp the push between an outright ban and just simply supporting restrictions.
Yeah, but you're seeing, you know, all these states that have trigger laws, I think it's 13 states, they're going to, you know, immediately ban or put major restrictions on abortion. I think pretty soon Florida's, if DeSantis doesn't act, Florida's going to look like an outlier among conservative states. And how does that affect him if he wants to run in a Republican presidential primary? Maybe he's thinks he's strong enough on issues like the pandemic and some of this woke stuff that he's been talking about that, you know, he doesn't have to go as far right as on abortion as on other issues. But it'll be something that he'll definitely be asked about. The abortion ruling fallout eclipsed another big story that's been dominating Florida headlines over the last few weeks: the governor's feud with Disney. But stay tuned. DeSantis said there's more coming on the Disney front. During a recent Fox News appearance, DeSantis said more Disney legislation is in the works. There's been a lot of speculation about whether revoking Disney's special district that governs its properties in Central Florida could force local taxpayers to pay for Disney's bond debt. And also whether the state violated a contract agreement with Disney by dissolving that district before the bond debt was paid off. Don't worry, DeSantis said on Fox. Legislation is being drafted to smooth all of that out. Antonio, is the fact that more legislation is needed on this issue a sign that maybe this wasn't very well thought out in the first place and more of a political move?
Yeah, obviously not. And look, it's no shocker that it wasn't. As we said, this action against Disney wasn't about policy. It was 100% political retribution. Look, it's not like Florida Tax Watch issued a 300-page report at the start of the session outlining why this special taxing district wasn't in the state taxpayers' best interest. And it's not like the James Madison Institute convened a day-long workshop last month to explain why this special taxing district was akin to government picking the winners and losers among Florida theme park operators. In fact, it was not even an issue until Disney's CEO voice criticism. And in reality, it wasn't even much criticism. It was more like regret that he and the company had not been more hands-on in opposing the legislation at the start.
And he was kind of he was basically forced into it by his employees. His natural inclination seemed to be to stay out of it.
And the inclination right now is to stay out of it. They've been trying to figure out, saying, how do we become more, you know, culturally neutral here, that we are fair with our employees at the same time that we're not engaged in politics. But yet again, but Zach, in DeSantis' world, that alone gets you attacked for being a potential groomer and exploiter of American children and families. And in Disney's case, having your government's, you know, self-government status canceled. The problem now is that, you know, as you said in your question, is that the fine print on the taxing district has come to the forefront. And that's fine print that probably no one has really looked at since 1967. Other than maybe a handful of people on Wall Street. And that fine print is pretty legally and financially complicated. It addresses $1 billion in bonds and debt, and the debt credit ratings, and, well, a lot more complexity than the two-page bill deleting the special taxing district took into account. As you mentioned, yeah, the governor told Laura Ingraham in that town hall last week that they have everything figured out, meaning they figured out that it isn't all figured out. Personally, look, I think the governor, they knew this much going in, and that's why they postponed the actual end of the taxing district until next year. That gives them, you know, time to sort out how to do this. But I'm also betting there could be years worth of litigation if Disney or bondholders sue. And the one thing that we know about getting stuck with a $1 billion tax bill is that that's something definitely worth suing about.
Yeah, and I think there was a lawsuit filed yesterday or just recently about from some Central Florida residents over this whole Disney episode. So I think lawsuits are going to be flying here. More laws are coming. This seems to be shaping up to be a really knotty and complicated and probably time-consuming issue that will stretch out further than this election cycle. Well, while DeSantis looks ahead to more Disney legislation, he's still signing bills that cleared the legislature early this year. That includes an elections bill that the governor signed last week. It sets up a state unit to investigate election fraud, among other changes. John, This is a pretty unusual new fraud fighting force.
There you are. Yeah. No, it certainly is. This elections police, as critics like to call it, it's going to cost $3.7 million.
And he didn't get his sworn officers right, John. So it's not like fair to call it the elections police, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is going to have a law enforcement component, though, because basically the way it's shaped. Yeah, you're right. He had wanted a much more muscular force.
It designates some people in FDLE to investigate this, but it's not like new officers. These are unsworn investigators, but then they kick it up to FDLE if they find that there's something to look into.
Yeah, it works out that there's going to be 15 new Department of State officials that are going to be accepting hotline tips about potential ballot wrongdoing, and that would then be passed on to 10 new Florida Department of Law Enforcement investigators for further examination and any action. So the idea that, you know, like any law enforcement unit, it's based on tips. Well, that's drawing some concerns because there's a underlying fear that it can be used to punish the governor's political enemies. If somebody calls and says they think some Democratic allied organization is doing something wrong, well, can this unit spring into action, demanding documents, taking depositions, and doing the kind of investigative things that can really just make it plain difficult for an organization to function? The security force, which this may be the first of its kind in the nation, that's not the only change, though, in this new elections law. The third party voting registration groups also could face fines that may climb to as much as $50,000. That's up from a current $1,000 penalty for doing things like failing to submit voter registration application forms that have been collected if they don't submit them to election officials within a required 2 weeks. So there's that kind of provision. And then also it makes a felony penalty to collect and submit more than 2 vote by mail ballots on behalf of others. So that ups that penalty from a misdemeanor. DeSantis, of course, is hailing these steps as another attack on what he calls ballot harvesting, a practice which many experts say is quite rare, but it's a frequent target for conservative wrath, basically. Remember, DeSantis has praised the state's elections performance during the 2020 election, but he has never distanced himself from former President Trump's claims and continued claims that he was robbed in the 2020 election by President Biden, and that he is still firing off unsupported allegations that election fraud cost him the White House. Of course, Trump carried Florida in both the 2016 and 2020 elections, but DeSantis had been getting some heat from Florida Trump followers who believed that there were problems here, too. The governor's staff met with some of them, and here maybe the security force and more. That's all part of the governor's response, his way to calm this sector of Trump followers. Democrats and others who have opposed the legislation have pointed out there's no evidence that organized voting fraud is a major problem in Florida or in most states. Elections officials will tell you that too. And of course, opponents have said that they fear that this new security force could become a weapon, something that's used by the governor and his allies against voter groups that are opposing Republican policies. But for the second year in a row, we have a big new elections law in Florida coming out of the legislature and the governor's office. Last year's is on appeal now before the federal 11th Circuit Court after Tallahassee federal judge Mark Walker. He found the limits on drop boxes and new voter requirements on registration groups. He found those unconstitutional and especially discriminatory toward minority voters. DeSantis, though, he's convinced that he's going to win on appeal, but it's also pretty likely that he'll wind up getting sued over the new security force and more. So we could wind up with basically 2 election laws making their way through the federal court system just in time for the latest election year coming this fall.
But that does mean that they may not actually apply this election year, right, John? I mean, so yeah. the status of the SB 90, the law from last year, the judge stopped some of it from going through, but allowed some of it to stand. Is that right?
Yeah. But some of the most, remarkable parts of Senate Bill 90 from last year are on hold right now. Some of the restrictions on drop boxes and some of these restrictions on voter registration groups. So, how the appeal comes out on that, we may get a ruling on that. This summer there were arguments before the 11th Circuit just a couple of weeks ago. So I think that's going to be something that we'll get a decision on relatively quickly.
All right. Well, we'll move on to some numbers here. Antonio, you want to tell us about yours?
Yeah, gentlemen, I had 45, as in 45%. That is a percentage of the Jewish vote in Florida that Republican leaders say former President Trump garnered in the 2020 election on the way to winning the state's electoral 29 electoral votes by
really a that, yeah that seems high to me.
It seems high, but that's what they said. That's what they said on Monday, that's the percentage they got in Florida. So in 2022 and 2024, the GOP is banking on growing its share of Jewish voters in the Sunshine State. And they even end up a voter center in Boca Raton this week, and on to do so, to sort of lead the effort there. And on hand for the grand opening was former Vice President Mike Pence. Now, Pence and Trump have gone their separate ways since the January 6th coup attempt at the U.S. Capitol. But in Boca, Pence lauded his former boss's Israeli policy. And in fact, there was much that Jewish voters in Florida and elsewhere liked about that policy, including moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem and the Abraham Peace Accords. For years, the so-called internationalist establishment warned against dire consequences about moving the embassy to Jerusalem, but Trump pulled it off, so give credit where credit is due. Now, what struck me covering the event on Monday, other than Pence lauding Trump in Trump's home county, was kind of the underlying clash with Trump's own America First brand of politics. Trump's America First dogma, as he has said, means we look out for our interests and other countries look out for theirs. George Washington called it entangling of alliances, but Trump simplified that to just avoiding stupid deals. But in Boca, Pence made it clear that the U.S. has a commitment to defend Israel. And that's no different than GOP leaders that go to Miami-Dade County, for example, and talk about the U.S. having to a commitment to pursue freedom and democracy in Cuba, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. This has kind of this alternating America First and America Internationalist has been a subterranean below the surface tension within the GOP brand for years. It surged again this winter with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and where many America Firsters in Congress then blasted the Biden administration for not doing enough to back Ukraine. Other than the 10 GOPers in Congress, including Matt Gaetz, who recently voted against the Ukraine military aid package. So yes, America First sounds great until you need votes in South Florida so you can win by a virtual landslide of 3.4%.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, the Jewish vote is important in Florida, and it definitely there's a strong conservative element within that. I'm surprised though that it's almost half of he got almost half the vote. So we'll see if he can expand on that. John, you want to tell us about your number?
Yeah, Zach, my four. That's going to be the number of justices on the 7-member Florida Supreme Court that Governor Ron DeSantis will have picked when he gets around to replacing Justice Alan Lawson, who just recently announced that he is stepping down from the court effective August 31st. Lawson is 60 and said he's retiring from the court, although he's 15 years away from the mandatory retirement age for justices. He was appointed by Governor Rick Scott in 2016, but unlike the United States Supreme Court, the Florida court doesn't leak too much. So we don't have too much more of any backstory about, what's prompting Lawson's seemingly early departure. But regardless of, the reasons for Lawson's leaving, DeSantis will have eventually now appointed a majority of the Florida Supreme Court, which is a remarkable achievement for a governor in his first term. Most governors get to appoint maybe one two or three, but DeSantis will have actually appointed six justices, since two of them, Justices Barbara Lagoa and Robert Luck, were appointed by then President Trump to a federal appeals court. And then DeSantis had to replace those replacements. They had been on the court only for a very short time. So and if you really want to get super technical or whatever on this, DeSantis actually appointed a seventh justice, Renatha Francis of Palm Beach County, whose appointment was nullified when she was ruled ineligible by the court for not having been a Florida bar member for 10 years. That's a requirement for being on the court. So DeSantis, like his political mentor, Donald Trump, he is the lucky leader who gets to appoint an outsized number of justices and, really leaving his mark on government and policy for quite a while. While we're recording this podcast on Thursday, today the Judicial Nominating Commission is holding its first meeting to lay out some of the basics about how the nomination will take place and kind of work on a timetable for it. But DeSantis will be making a move, and that will be coming forward with a nominee fairly soon. And in a strange twist of Florida politics, the seven-member Florida Supreme Court will soon be comprised of four selections from Florida's current governor and three picks made by Charlie Crist, who is one of the three Democrats now running against DeSantis for governor this election season. And Crist had selected the court's other three justices back when he was Florida's Republican governor from 2007 to 2011. So there you have it. You're going to have four DeSantis appointments and three Crist appointments on the Florida Supreme Court pretty soon. And that'll be a very cozy bench.
There's a lot of talk about how Trump reshaped the U.S. Supreme Court and how, the impact of that when you look at what might happen with Roe v. Wade. It'll be fascinating to see the impact in Florida on policy with with DeSantis's reshaped state Supreme Court, which had blocked a lot of conservative policy over the years under a different configuration with more liberal justices. And there's a lot of speculation about how that could change going forward. Well, my number is 75 million. That's the number of American families that President Joe Biden claims will get a tax increase under Florida Senator Rick Scott's 11-point plan that Scott released earlier this year. Biden blasted Scott's plan as the ultra MAGA agenda in remarks at the White House on Wednesday. Biden was giving a speech about the economy. He's hoping he can shift the focus from issues like inflation that are dogging his presidency. And it's sort of a classic political move. Instead of making 2022 a referendum on his economic approach, he's trying to sort of twist it around and make it a choice between his views and the GOP alternative. And that alternative is embodied by Scott, who came out with a plan that has drawn bipartisan criticism. Scott's proposal said all Americans should pay some level of income tax, which was immediately received as a tax hike on many lower income people. Of course, Scott says that's not true, and he called Biden's comments Wednesday, quote, a complete lie. But prominent Republicans such as Mitch McConnell also have said that Scott is pushing a tax hike. One thing is certain, Scott's plan has received a lot of attention, and in some ways that could be good for him. He's probably happy to be in a fight with Biden, which could boost him with Republicans. But some Republicans seem worried that Scott's plan is giving Democrats more ammunition than they'd like this election cycle. That wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production guru, Thomas Cordy. Thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.